ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीशुक उवाच अक्रूरोऽपि चथं रात्रिं माधुपुर्यं महामति उषित्वा रथम् अस्थाय प्राययो नन्दगोकुलम् श्रीशुक उवाच अक्रूरोऽपि चथं रात्रिम् माधुपुर्यं महामति उषित्वरथमस्थाय प्राय नन्दगोकुलम् श्रीशुक उवाच अक्रूरोऽपि चथं रात्रिं माधुपुर्यं महामति उषित्वा रथमस्थाय प्राय नन्दगोकुलम् Shuka Uvacha. Shukadev Goswami said, Akrura, Akrura, Apicha, and Tam that Ratrim night Madhupuryam in the city of Mathura. Mahamati, high-minded, Ushitva, remaining, Aratham, his chariot, Asthaya, mounting, Prayayau, he set off, Nandagokulam, for the cowherd village of Nanda Maharaj. Shukadev Goswami said, after passing the night in the city of Mathura, the high-minded Akrura mounted his chariot and set off for the cowherd village of Nanda Maharaj. Purport. King Kamsa ordered Akrura to go to Vrindavan on the Ekadasi of the dark fortnight of the Vedic month of Palgun. After spending the night in Mathura, Krishna left early the next day. That morning, Narada offered his prayers to Krishna in Vrindavan, and in the afternoon, the demon Vyoma was killed there. At dusk, Akrura entered the Lord's village. Om Agyantimidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshuru Nilidham Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhitam Stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam pandeham sri guru sri juta padakamalam sri gurun vaishnavam cha sri rupam sagrajatham sahakana raghunathan vitam Tam sajivam sadvaitam savadutam parijana sahitam Krishna chaitanya devam Sri Radha Krishna padahan sahakana lalita Sri Vishakan vitamscha He Krishna karuna sindhu dina bandhu jagatpate Gopeshwa Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Bhansha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patithanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 38, entitled Akrura's Arrival in Vrindavan. Verse number 1. to welcome some of our special guests today. His Holiness Niranjan Swami Maharaj, His Grace Kuladri Prabhu, His Holiness Dayananda Swami Maharaj, Damodar Maharaj, and my very exalted God sisters Manjulali Devi and Manjari Devi. Would you like chairs to sit on? Let us welcome all of them by loudly chanting Hari. In today's verse, we find Akrura mounting his new chariot to travel from Mathura to Vrindavan. In the previous chapter, we learn of the background of this story. Krishna had just delivered Aristasura. And that night, by Krishna's arrangement, he transformed and showed us how to transform even the apparent greatest calamities into the most auspicious opportunities for loving devotional service. Aristasura was such a terrible asura. He assumed the form of a bull, which is generally the symbol of Dharma. In the guise of Dharma, he came not only to destroy Krishna, but to destroy all the residents of Vrindavan. So giant and powerful. But Krishna stood before him and easily flipped him over by grabbing his horns, and then with his very soft lotus feet, he kicked him a few times, and Aristasura attained spiritual perfection in his own way. This took place on Bahulastami. Krishna, Sri Radha told Krishna that now how will I dance with you when you have killed a bull? So on Sri Radharani's, according to her proposal, Krishna called all the holy places, and with his own footprint, he made a kund and filled them. And that became Shamkund. Now, Sri Radha, who is the ultimate source of all bhakti devotion, and is the complete whole of all love, prema, to facilitate the most sweet, beautiful, and highest of all pastimes of the Lord, she was about to create Radha Kund. And with the hoof print of Aristasura, her and her friends, the gopis, with their little bangles, and they dug it out and excavated the hoof print of Aristasura. So they took the greatest tragedy and transformed it into the greatest opportunity for loving devotional service. Narada Muni, understanding the heart and the will of the Lord, was performing his inconceivable pastimes. Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Nidrina. this beautiful verse tells that very difficult to understand the mind of a Vaishnava. In the case of Narada Muni, Tesham Satata Yuktanam, Krishna tells in Gita, that when you are engaged in my transcendental loving service with all your heart, mind, and soul, then I reveal my will to you. So Narada understood Krishna's will. He understood that now it was time for Krishna to conclude his Vrindavan pastimes on the earthly level, the Prakata Leela of the Lord. For several purposes. To give the Brijabasis the highest ecstasies of Vipralamba Bhav in separation. Just after Krishna left for Mathura, after some time, he sent Uddhav to Vrindavan. Krishna sent his most confidential, loving associate of all of Mathura, and later Dwarka, to give his message to the gopas and gopis. And although Uddhav was taking prasad with Krishna, he was constantly engaged in discussing subject matters with Krishna, walking with Krishna, sitting with Krishna, laying down with Krishna. When he saw the love of the gopis and the gopas in separation from Krishna, this vipralamba or viraha bhava, his conclusion was, I have no love for Krishna. In comparison, they are absorbed in the highest level of a samadhi, total absorption in Krishna, crying day and night, remembering Krishna at every moment. Whatever they saw, it gave them remembrance of Krishna. Whether it was a cloud or a tree or a cow, even the cows were in this state, and the calves and the bulls. Everyone in Vrindavan was immersed in awaiting Krishna's return. They would make garlands all day with the thought that Krishna would come that day. They would prepare Krishna's favorite bhoga with the idea that he would come. And this is how they spent every day, year after year. You see, they weren't just sitting and thinking like this. They were involved in serving Krishna. And even when they were like this, when they would see any place in Vrindavan, they would remember what Krishna did in that place. And this is the way the six Goswamis who were sent by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the mood of the gopis, this is how they saw Vrindavan. They were given this vision. They had descended from the spiritual world with this vision. Wherever they looked in Vrindavan, Hey Radhe Brajadeva Ke Chalalite Hananda Suno Kuta. They were seeing Krishna in separation. This is where he would dance. This is where he danced on Kaliya's hoods. This is where he danced with Balaram and the gopas in the pastures. This is where he danced with the gopis in the forest. Every leaf of every tree they were seeing Krishna. And this was Uddhava's experience. So to facilitate this viraha bhava, and also to assist Krishna in fulfilling his mission of paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskratam dharma the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells, to annihilate the miscreants, to reestablish religion, and to attract my devotees' hearts, I come again and again. So Kamsa was creating so much terror around the world, and especially to Krishna's very loving dear devotees, Vasudeva and Devaki. In Krishna's heart, he wanted to fulfill this mission. So Narada went to Kamsa and told Kamsa that you remember at the time when Devaki was married, you heard that voice that the eighth child of Krishna would be, Devaki would be the cause of your death. Well, you remember there was a little girl that was born of Devaki. Well, I want to tell you the truth of it. Actually, that little girl was Yashoda's daughter. And she was switched. Who you are thinking all along to be the son of Nanda is actually the son of Devaki, Krishna. He is the one who is prophesied to be the cause of your death. This was an absolute confirmation coming from a great acharya. And Vasudev, he's the one who made all the switches. Kamsa became overcome with uncontrollable anger and drew his sword. I will kill Vasudev immediately. But Narada was so empowered to say just the right thing at the right time. First he incited Kamsa's anger. And then he said, no, you should not do that. Because if you kill Vasudev, then Krishna and Balaram will understand what's happening and they will run away and hide. Better imprison Vasudev and bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura. So Kamsa was thinking he was the controller. But Krishna, through his devotee Narada, was completely like a little puppet controlling Kamsa. So then Kamsa sent, with even more envy and anger before, he sent another demon to Vrindavan. This is the first time he sent a demon to Vrindavan knowing that Krishna was the person who was to kill him. He sent Keshi. Keshi went running to Vrindavan. He took the form of a gigantic horse. It's not that Keshi was just a horse. He was a powerful asura. But he had such incredible mystical powers, he could change his form any way he wanted. So by his chanting of mantras and whatever else he was doing, he manifested his body into an enormous horse. And went galloping into Vrindavan. The whole earth was shaking. The hairs on top of his neck were hitting the clouds. It caused such a fear in Vrindavan. Jiva Goswami tells that the cows in the goshalas were so afraid, they broke out of the goshalas and started running in all directions in the pastures and the forests, crying out in fear. And when Nanda Maharaj saw this, he and the cowherd men went running to see what it was, and when they saw Keshi, this enormous horse galloping and making terrible sounds, they didn't know what to do. Then Krishna, he ran really fast in front of Nanda and in front of all the gopas and in front of Balaram and stood right in front of Keshi. Yashoda Mai, she cried out, Krishna, this is not for you to do. Why are you... How will you stop an enormous horse like this? Krishna said, he's just a horse. And Yashodama, he was saying to Nanda Maharaj, why Krishna always has to be the one to kill all these demons? Can't you? You're the king of Vrindavan. Can't you have someone else do it for once? And Krishna saw his mother was in great distress. So he just smiled upon her and reassured her. Then he looked at Keshi and challenged him to fight. When Krishna was standing face to face with Keshi, for a little boy like this to challenge such a personality to fight as Keshi, it's like an insult. Keshi opened his mouth as wide as it could go and roared. No, because I don't have a good throat, I can't try to resemble this roar, but all of you can try. Everyone. Sound like a squirrel on its deathbed. But he was roaring. And when Keshi roared, it was like millions of thunders filling the sky. Everyone was watching. His eyes were red like coals as he galloped toward Krishna with the singular intent to devour him. And Krishna started very, very skillfully dancing in different directions so that Keshi couldn't really catch him. And then Krishna grabbed Keshi by the legs and threw him the distance of 100 bows. Keshi went unconscious. But when he woke up seconds later, he was really humiliated. So he was more angry than ever before and again rushed toward Krishna with his mouth open. Krishna effortlessly took his fist and put it in the mouth of Keshi. Just stuck it in. See? Just as a serpent effortlessly slips into a hole, he put his arm in Keshi's mouth. Now this arm is so soft. To the gopis, to the gopas, to Yashoda Mai, his arm is as soft as the stem of a lotus flower. And so delicate and gentle. But to Keshi, his fist began to grow. And the first sign of auspiciousness was suddenly, miraculously, just by being in his mouth, all of Keshi's teeth just fell out. Then Krishna's hand became hot as fire, and his arm and fist expanded, till it completely choked any possibility of air going in and out of the throat of Keshi. So in that state, Keshi was, his eyes were bulging, all his hairs were trembling, his limbs were struggling, and he fell to the ground, past stool and urine. If Krishna wants to embarrass you in public,
Yes, because this demon was really proud, and here he is passing urine and stew all over the place, and everybody's watching. Even the demigods are watching. So don't feel bad if Krishna humiliates you. Because ultimately, Keshi was given liberation. And the demigod showered flowers. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that each of these demons who came to Vrindavan represent obstacles within our own selves to the path of pure devotional service, following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. Keshi represents, please listen carefully, because it may consciously or unconsciously apply to us. Keshi represents the feeling, the thought in a devotee's mind that I am a great devotee. I am a great Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru, whatever. I'm a great leader. This consciousness is like Keshi. One time, Srila Prabhupada asked devotees, what is the most beautiful of all animals? And devotees, knowing exactly what the most beautiful animal is, they were so eager to please Prabhupada, they said, the cow. Prabhupada said, no, the most beautiful animal is the horse. Yes? That was interesting. Now, on so many levels, it's important for us to understand that Prabhupada has different definitions of certain things that he says, that he reveals at different times. But a horse is very beautiful. When Krishna drove the chariot of Arjuna, he had beautiful horses, his own personal horses sometimes. So when we think we're a great devotee, and horses are very fast, and they can jump very high, and some horses, some horses, I know somebody, one of my cousins in America, he owns racehorses. Yes, Ajay, you know about these. Ajay was a star polo player when he was younger. And at his daughter's marriage, there was horse polo and elephant polo games. Isn't as action-packed as horse polo games. It's aesthetic, but not very fast-moving. So, you know, my cousin, the amount of money he invests in a single horse, it's a huge amount. More than Rolls Royce's or Mercedes-Benz horse. And then the horse, like, sprains its ankle and everything's finished. But so here Keshi, he appeared as the fastest, biggest, most champion horse that has ever been, and he's running to Vrindavan. Representing our tendency to think that I'm a great devotee. I'm a great guru. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught, the first principle of a Vaishnava is Nitya Krishna Chas. Jivara Swarupai Nitya Krishna, Jivara Nitya Krishna Das. That we are eternally the servants of Krishna. Gopi Bharatur Padakamalayora Dasa Dasanu Das. The servants of the servants of the servants of Krishna. Trinadapi Sunichena Turor Ivasahishna. Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. To be humble like blade of grass. Forgiving and tolerant like a tree. Eager to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. This is the spirit of a true devotee. This is what is required to actually cry out the names of the Lord. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in this regard explains how when we understand the power and the presence of these different influences within us, it should totally humble us to take shelter of Krishna. Because just as we have no power with all of our physical, intellectual abilities to fight against something like Keshi, similarly, we have no power to fight against this tendency within ourselves. But just as the Brijabasis were completely dependent on Krishna, even though they didn't even see him as God, they just saw him as their loving friend. In situations like this, they had no other shelter. In the same way, to humble ourselves before Krishna, in the spirit that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught through these verses we have just recited, that is our only hope. Srila Prabhupada told us, what is the Vaikuntha consciousness? And of course, the Goloka consciousness is something deeper than even this. It's the highest Vaikuntha. The Vaikuntha consciousness is, every devotee is better than me. Let me serve. And in Vrindavan, with all of its intimate, esoteric, ecstatic, loving relationships between everyone and Krishna and Radha, and everyone with each other, there is this appreciation and honor of everyone's devotional service. But this idea, I'm better than you. And if I'm better than you, that means my guru and my temple and my mission and everything is better than yours. It's like an all-devouring keshi. The capacity to actually appreciate devotional service in others is the quality of a Vaishnava. So this Keshi is either manifest or unmanifest in all of us. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur is revealing how we should respond by really humbling ourselves. I'm not a great devotee. I just want to be the servant of the servant of the servant of great devotees. That consciousness is greatness in the eyes of Krishna. And that consciousness is the consciousness in which we can raise our arms like Draupadi and sincerely cry out the holy name. So this happened in the morning. We just read from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary that on Ekadasi, this discussion happened between Narada and Kamsa. First thing in the morning, Keshi went and was delivered. And then Narada Muni came to Vrindavan to meet Krishna. And she expressed to Krishna, "You have just killed Keshi. This is incredible, wonderful. I have seen it with my own eyes. You are the supreme absolute truth. You are the personality of Godhead. You are situated in everyone's heart. You are a knower of everything and everyone." And praising Krishna in so many ways, with so much love, with so much devotion. He explained, "Now it's time to come to Mathura. And I will see Chanura and Mushtika killed, and I will see so many others." Meanwhile, in Mathura, Kamsa called for Akrura. And he told Akrura, "I want you to go early tomorrow morning to Vrindavan to bring Krishna and Balaram here." And Kamsa was so good at diplomacy. He affectionately held Akrura's hand and said, "No one can do what you could do because of your wisdom and because of your good relationships with everyone. I want you to bring Krishna and Balaram here. You are famous as one who always performs and executes expertly his duty." And then he told Akrura that when Krishna and Balaram come here, because they are the ones who have been prophesied to kill me, I will have my elephant Kuvalayapita kill him. And if that doesn't work, I will have Chanura or Mushtika kill him. And when they are killed, then I will kill Vasudeva. And I will kill all the Bhojas and the Brishnis. And I will kill Ugrasena, who wants to take my throne. This is interesting psychology, isn't it? The throne belonged to Ugrasena. And Kamsa took it away from him, his own father. And now he's making Ugrasena look like such a terrible, terrible, envious demon. He wants to take my throne. In other words, do what I just did to him. The world is a mirror of our own consciousness. And this is the psychology of people who are inflicted by materialistic ego. That we think like this. We see, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, "The only reason I see faults in others is because I am honeycombed with so many faults myself." So Kamsa's, you know, if he went to a psychologist or psychiatrist, they would probably diagnose him as being in denial. Yes? He's done such atrocious things. And yet he's thinking. He's not just saying. He's actually thinking that Krishna is doing atrocious things. He's killed so many of his own people, and so many of his own loyal people have escaped to other places. And his own father, Ugrasena the king, he tore him down from his throne and took his position and imprisoned his father. And now he's saying, "My father is so demoniac, he wants to take my throne. I will kill him." Akrura is listening to this. Akrura is a very pious devotee of the Lord. But in his mind, he understands that Krishna is my beloved Lord, the Supreme Personality of God. And even though I go on a mission like this, Krishna will understand why I'm coming. Now, the nature of devotional service, sometimes we do something that Krishna understands, but devotees don't understand. That happens sometimes. So, but he knew that Krishna would understand. And even if it meant, like Bhishma later on, to be on the wrong side. For the service of Krishna, he was willing to even accept being misunderstood for all time to come. Kamsa told Akrura, I have a brand new handmade chariot for you to go in. Because in those days they didn't have like chariot plants. Everything was handmade in those days. So there was a beautiful handmade chariot. And Kamsa was thinking, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that Akrura will really want to ride this brand new state-of-the-art chariot. It will further induce him to do it. But Akrura was thinking something very different. He was thinking, there's no possibility that I would drive Krishna in a chariot that Kamsa had driven in. Because this was equal to Kamsa's chariot, better. He said, but because it's brand new, it's like boga. It's offering Krishna something that nobody else has ever enjoyed. It is suitable for Krishna. Then Kamsa called for Chanura and Mushtika and his ministers and said, I want you to erect immediately a giant wrestling arena where all the citizens of Mathura and so many others from the outlying villages and towns could come to see this wrestling match and this bow ceremony. And then he told them, and for auspiciousness you should slaughter many animals immediately and offer them to Lord Shiva. And he explained, we will have Kuvalayapita, this giant, all-powerful elephant there that will kill Krishna. And if it doesn't work, we will have Chanura and Mushtika. They are wrestlers whose strength is like lightning bolts. So they had all the arrangements made, and Akrura left. Meanwhile, Shukadeva Goswami says, Krishna was herding his cows with Balaram and his friends. And another asura came to Vrindavan. In the morning, Keshi came. Akrura is on his way. And in the afternoon, Vyomasura arrives. Vyomasura means the demon who is like the sky, who can fly. Very powerful person. Incredible yogic magician. Although he had a gigantic asura form, by his potencies, he transformed himself to look just like a very tiny little simple-hearted loving cowherd boy. And went to play with Krishna. That day, they played a game. Some of the boys took the roles of sheep. Others took the role of shepherds. That means people who take care of sheep. And other boys took the role of thieves. And the game was that the thieves were to try to capture the sheep. And the sheep were trying to get away from the thieves, and the shepherds were trying to protect the sheep. Very nice little game for children. And they're playing, and they're laughing, and they're joking, and everything else. And meanwhile, Vyoma, he's not laughing and joking. He's very serious. He was stealing the little boys who were sheep. And instead of, you know, like touching them, and then they're out of the game, he was grabbing them and taking them. It explains in the Bhagavatam that they were playing this game on Govardhan Hill. Now, if you go to Kamyavan, there's Vyoma Gufa, the cave of Yomasura. It's still there today. You can go and chant your japa in this cave. You can have kirtan in the cave. Vyoma was taking these little gopas and putting them in the cave. And then with a huge rock, he would seal the opening of the cave. So they were literally prisoners in a dark cave where there was no air circulation. And one by one, he was stealing all the boys. There were many, many boys, and putting them all in the cave. Pitch dark. And soon Krishna saw that of all these cowherd boys, there was only four or five left. And he understood that this little gopa, who seemed so simple and innocent, is Vyoma. And his intention is to kill me and kill all my friends. So Krishna, he played the part of a constable. I forgot to tell you that part. Some of the boys were constables. The thieves were trying to catch the sheep. The shepherds were trying to protect the sheep. The sheep were trying to escape from the thieves, and the constables were supposed to catch the thieves. So Krishna played his role very nicely, and he caught Vyomasura. And little cowherd boy grabbed him and squeezed him. And Vyomasura understood that this is a very, very difficult situation. So he tried to escape Krishna's grip, but he couldn't. Then he resumed his original size. Massive, like a mountain he grew. And with all of his strength, he was trying to get away from Krishna's grip, but Krishna just holding on to him. He couldn't escape. And then Krishna picked him up and threw him on the ground. And Vyomasura lost all of his air, couldn't breathe, and was liberated. After doing this, as the demigods were showering flowers upon Krishna, he went to the cave and he broke with one movement of his hand, he broke the rock and moved it aside and brought all his friends out. Vyomasura represents falling into the trap of Maya through unfavorable association. Unfavorable association can come in many forms. That type of association that distracts us from pure devotional service. It could come in many ways. And it's interesting how Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives Vyomasura as the symbol, the personification of this. Because sometimes unfavorable association appears to be our best friends, in the sense very pleasing. Vyomasura appeared like a cowherd boy, like Krishna's friend. When Maya wants to get us, she will present situations that you will enjoy so much if you do this. You'll be so happy. If you're with these people, you will enjoy so much and be so happy. And it might even really be good for your Krishna consciousness. Mahatsevam dwaram ahuravam oktes tamo dwaram yoshita sanghi sangam. Rishabhdev tells us in Bhagavatam that association with Mahatseva, service to great souls, and association with great souls is the door that opens the path to liberation. and associating with people who are too much attached to various distractions. People too much attached to their egos. Too much attached to ideas that distract them from faith in bhakti and the Supreme Absolute Personality of Godhead. And our position as the eternal servant of the Lord. That association like Vyoma can create a great, great impediment to our spiritual progress. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, not only unfavorable association, but also too much attachment due to our false ego to our wealth, our knowledge, or our accomplishments. This is how subtle Maya can be. Even if in Krishna consciousness we accomplish great things, if we become proud of our accomplishments, if it feeds our egos, it's Vyomasura. Krishna tells in Gita, Prakrite kriyamana niguna karmani sarvash ahankara. That bewildered by material energy, we think we're the doers of activities. Krishna tells, I am the strength of the strong, I'm the ability in man, I'm the intelligence of the intelligent. Krishna consciousness is whatever great things we may do, it humbles us that I'm just an instrument of the Lord. There's a beautiful lecture of Srila Prabhupada. It was in London, I think 1973. He had just installed Radha Gokulananda at Bhaktivedanta Manor. And devotees from all over Europe and all over the world were coming. This was an incredible event because Srila Prabhupada came to America after 38 days on a cargo ship with 40 rupees and didn't know anyone. He was living in Butler, Pennsylvania for a month and then came and lived in the Bowery, which was then a ghetto in New York City. And it seemed like he had no one and nothing to help him. And now he had centers all over the world. And George Harrison of the Beatles, one of the most famous people on the planet, bought this mansion, this manor for him, a big estate, and he was installing deities there. Radha Gokulananda, in 1971, I believe, Prabhupada had a pandal program in New Delhi. And the deities they worshipped through that pandal was Radha Gokulananda, these deities. And then later they were shipped to London. And they were installed on Janmashtami. So it was an incredible, unprecedented, historical event in the pages of Vaishnavism. And the next day was his Vyas Puja, Prabhupada's appearance day. And there were hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of devotees there. And Srila Prabhupada, he was giving credit to everyone else. He said, he quoted Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he said, you will be happy to know that very soon we will be coming out with the full Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Prabhupada said, it is not my credit. It is the credit of Prajumana Mahashoy. He has actually done the work. And his wife, Arundhati. And then he started giving credit to everybody for everything. Most of them were Grihastha disciples. He was praising them. And Srila Prabhupada would say many times, my only qualification is I'm simply repeating the words of my Guru Maharaj. My only qualification, I'm simply trying to execute the order of my Guru Maharaj. At the very beginning, on the Jaladutta in his prayer, Lord Srila Prabhupada, he prayed, Krishna, make me your puppet. Make me your puppet and make me dance as you want me to dance. So of course, we give all glories to Srila Prabhupada. But why is he so worthy of all of our glories? Because he gives all glory to his guru, the parampara, and Krishna. To take the credit and become egoistic over our accomplishments is a great impediment. And we have seen, sometimes devotees accomplish amazing things. But if it makes us arrogant, it's just a matter of time. Internally, we're being actually strangled. We may think that we're accomplishing so many things, but if we're egoistic about it and we start criticizing others, making aparads to others, we're like in the cave of the grips of Vyomasura. We are, in fact, we are Vyomasura, instruments of his powers. So we have to be very careful. Saragrahi. To seek the essence. And what is the essence? Pure devotional service. The preliminary state by which we enter into the realm of that essence is Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim Kavitam Vajagadisha Kameye Mama Janmani Janmanishwari Bhavatad Bhakti Rohiti. Krishna, I do not want wealth. I do not want the pleasures of the senses. I do not want fame or followers. I only want to serve you unconditionally, according to your wish, even birth after birth after birth. That is the essence. That is Krishna consciousness. So after teaching all these incredible lessons, Akrora arrives in the evening. It's a very, very action-packed day, like every day in Vrindavan. We're just getting a sample here of life in Vrindavan. They woke up and Keshi came. Around lunchtime, Vyomasura came, and in the evening, Akrura is arriving. And as Akrura sees the foot, the whole time he's driving his chariot from Mathura to Vrindavan, he's offering deep, humble, loving prayers for service to Krishna, for the shelter of Krishna. And our acharyas teach us that entering Vrindavan is not possible in a deep way through a train ticket or a rickshaw or a tanga or even a car. We can physically enter into Vrindavan, but the spirit of Vrindavan can only be entered when we have the consciousness like Akrura. Totally humbling ourselves, crying, praying for
for the shelter of Krishna, like a beggar. Whether we're kings with great fortunes or whether we're Goswamis living under trees, that's not important. We have seen even the greatest, most powerful, wealthy kings and others. Pundarik Vidyanidhi was a very wealthy man. But he had this humility. Everything is Krishna's. Let me serve. As was King Prataparudra, as was Ambarish Maharaj, as was Yudhisthira Maharaj when he became king. And then we have Raghunath Das Goswami, who was living under trees and hardly eating anything, just wearing discarded cloth of the Brijabasis and making it into a little loincloth. Whatever it may be, entering into Vrindavan is this mood that is personified in Akrura, like a beggar, begging for grace, begging for service. Not, my Lord, how may I serve you? But rather, my Lord, you've given me everything I have. Please, allow me. The supreme fortune and treasure of my life to serve you and to please you. In this state, we can purify our hearts very quickly as we chant the holy names. In the spiritual world, even the echo are personalities. There is nothing that is a thing in the spiritual world. Every apparent thing is a fully liberated, conscious personality. The energy, the shakti of Sri Radha for the pleasure of Krishna. So, in this way, we are being given the key of how to actually enter Vrindavan, wherein we could actually feel Sri Radha Krishna's presence, where we could actually be in the consciousness to deeply appreciate their wonderful pastimes, where we could actually appreciate the unlimited value of every grain of dust in Brajbhumi, every tree, every leaf, every mountain. That consciousness is not something that we can just impose upon our mind. That consciousness is not something that happens automatic just because we're physically there. It's a consciousness that is revealed to us by grace. When through our gurus and through the Vaishnavas, Srimati Radharani and Lord Sri Krishna are pleased with us. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. When we have that loving spirit of service, then they reveal themselves to us. Thank you very much. And Srila Prabhupada taught us, when we have that consciousness in Vrindavan, then we can actually experience Vrindavan in feelings of separation within our own heart,
wherever we are, anywhere in the world. Is there any questions? Ananda Brindavan Prabhu has a question.
Thank you, Maharaj. Very nice class. Maharaj, you are speaking about KC, that you don't have to show that you are great. In spiritual life, what happens, this is my experience somewhat. In the beginning of our Krishna consciousness, somebody tells you are great. We know the philosophy and we understand that I am nothing. All the things is happening by Krishna. And I have to maintain the humility, otherwise there will be no way I can maintain my Krishna consciousness. But when you spend more and more years in devotional life, and somehow Krishna's inconceivable way, you get some success. And then a flow of devotees tell that you are great. Everybody tells you are great. Everybody says that something is special in you. That flow which is coming at a time, to maintain a mental equilibrium at that moment of time, it's extremely difficult, even if we know the philosophy. And we know that supposing anything going wrong, I'll be going away from Krishna consciousness altogether, because pride will kill me, and pride is the only thing that Krishna doesn't want it. So when a big flow of greatness and all those things comes, at that time, even if we know the philosophy, then also it becomes so difficult to maintain the mental equilibrium. At that time, what is the shelter that we have to take at that moment of time so that our consciousness doesn't get disturbed and we maintain the same humility what we wanted to have it?
Hare Krishna. Your question is very great. Because you are very great. And being so great as you are, with such great questions, what is your hope for survival? The only hope is to be honest, be simple, and be grateful, because nothing is yours. In a second, you could be blind. In a second, you could lose your power to speak, lose your power to think, lose your power to follow moral principles. Material energy is infinitely more powerful than us. We have to take shelter. So when people say we're great, it should actually humble us. It shouldn't make us proud. Because we should know that we're not the doer. That Krishna's doing through me. This is his greatness. The more we're a sincere devotee, the more they're glorified and praised, the more humble they get. Because he's saying this, it's almost like magnifying our worthlessness when people praise us. Because we realize it's not me. It's Krishna. We take shelter of Krishna. And we're grateful to Krishna for allowing us to do this service for him as long as he wants us to do it. And we're grateful to the people in that sense who are even praising us because they're humbling us. That's not just knowledge. That's just being honest. It's dishonest to take credit. It's just like if a wealthy man gives his assistant 10 crores of rupees to put in the bank, and the man goes and says, "This is my money," is that honest? Not only is it not honest, but it just doesn't work. It's just a magic. He may fool the banker and everything like that for a little time, but eventually he has to pay the consequence. So similarly, whatever we have is the gifts. If it wasn't for all the Vaishnavas around who have given us so much knowledge and so much inspiration and so much direction and so much strength, we couldn't be doing the service we're doing. If it wasn't for our gurus and our guru parampara, we wouldn't even know what to do, nor would we have any strength to do it. If it wasn't for Krishna within our heart giving us every single power we have, what could we accomplish? So everything is his property. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. If we want to be peaceful, we understand these things. Krishna is the proprietor of everything, including all our skills and whatever we have and all resources. And everything ultimately is meant for his enjoyment. Because Krishna is the best well-wishing friend of everyone. And if we really want to be a friend of someone, just be the representative of Krishna. The greatest friend just brings us to the ultimate friend, Krishna. You see, you have to be humble to be grateful. An egoistic person cannot actually be humble. We could speak in a humble way, but we can't in our heart be humble. To be grateful, we have to be humble, that we really appreciate. Is it grateful to think, "You have given me this, but I deserve more"? Or at least I deserve this. To actually be grateful. "I don't deserve, but I'm getting. Thank you." And even if a wealthy man, patram pushpam palam toyam, even though may not need things, but we all need love. Yes? A parent is grateful to a child when the child offers them love, or even a little gift out of love. To actually value what's really valuable. To humble ourselves. Then we could be grateful. Not that Krishna and the world see what I have done. Rather, "Thank you, Krishna. You allowed me to do this for you. This is your greatness. And all the world, you know, that you have accepted my service is your greatness. You have accepted the service that Krishna has allowed me to do. That is your greatness." That is the Vaishnava consciousness. Does that answer your question? Really? I'm very grateful to you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much. Today, for the Sunday program,